I asked our community to send me names of films to for me to check out, and everyone said I should watch Lights Out, but I couldn't get Lights Out because it was like $15 just to watch, and I was like, I ain't paying no $15. So I opted for the $3.99 rental, which was The Greasy Strangler.
Welcome to Rated NA, the podcast for the website nerdappropriate.com. This is episode number 249, and it's a spooky episode.
It's going to be scary.
Spooky-sode.
Let's hope that's not really its name.
And I'm Scott.
I'm your host, Matt. Hey, no one said their name yet, Scott.
And I'm Ash.
All right.
Yeah, there we go. We all said it.
Yeah. Let's see. Well, we have a lot to get to today, so we're going to talk about all the trailers that came out over the past 2 weeks, and some other news, including the internet shutting down. We have a lot of reviews for our spooky episode, which include Raiders, The Story of the Greatest Fan Film Ever Made, The Greasy Strangler, Victor Frankenstein, The Game Virginia, Hello Neighbor, and The Bunker. So we got a lot to we got a lot to do this week. In our Naquato, we ask, what is the one thing that scares you the most?
Yes. People got really like dark and deep with this
got
one.
Deep
too,
into so. This one.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I didn't read any of the responses.
There's some depressing answers in there.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's all right.
Yeah.
We'll make this a bright and cheery, spooky sode.
Okay.
Yay. So this episode's brought to you by Loot Crate. What's that stocking up behind you? This month's Loot Crate is filled with terrifyingly terrific and frighteningly fun collectibles and apparel from your favorite horror franchises. Stay together, don't try to start your car, and for God's sake, don't trip over anything. In this crate, chow down with Freddy Krueger, show your camp spirit, and join a deadly team. Each and every crate comes with an exclusive t-shirt as well as a unique item from your favorite franchises. Head on over to lootcrate.com/ratedNA, use the code RATEDNA, and get a discount on your order, help out the podcast, and get fun stuff in the mail.
Mm-hmm.
So do that, folks. Hey Ash.
Hey.
What have you been up to?
I was waiting for what you playing.
Oh boy.
Oh man. It's been so long. I missed that show. Anyway, so we all three of us we played some Horde mode for Gears of War 4.
Yeah.
We didn't play enough of it, but it was super fun. Scott and I played the other night. We ended up getting to wave 50 with a bunch of random guys that were actually really, really good.
Yeah, we played way too much of it last night, the other night.
It was kind of crazy. It was one of those things where we got on at like, I don't know, 8:39-ish. We're like, we'll play for a little while. We played one round of Horde and it ended at almost 1 a.m. And I was like, kind of like crawled to the bedroom because I usually get up pretty damn early now. So it was made for a rough day the next day.
I thought it was really fun. I thought it was going to be really bad because as soon as we got into the game, they started building fences. And then you could hear over the mic, somebody was like teaching someone else how to play. They're like, yeah, that button's move and that button's shoot. Yeah. Like, I'm like, oh my God. I almost told Ash, I was like, let's just quit out of this right now and we'll find a new group.
It was bad. It was like a guy, I think he was playing split screen with his buddy. So he was, you could hear him over the chat. The other guy was just, you know, like a level one guy. So we were like, oh man, this is going to go very, very poorly. It was really fun.
That's fun.
But it was cool. He was engineering. He fixed everything. Yeah. It was a good team.
Yeah. When done right with a good team, Horde mode is just always a lot of fun. I've been watching a couple of new fall TV shows that I haven't talked about yet. So I'll talk about them briefly. I'm watching a show called Timeless, which is a show that people will either love or hate. I'm in the camp of loving it right now because I'm kind of a history nerd. So it's a show about time travelers, and there's a group of time traveling terrorists that are trying to disrupt the timelines. They steal like the one working time machine and go back and try and alter history. So they go back and try and change like the crash of the Hindenburg, and then they go back and try and like change the assassination of Abraham Lincoln. And then the good guys, there's only three of them, they are trying to, of course, thwart these attempts, and they have the old prototype time machine. So they're kind of racing through time to try and do things to the timeline. And it's just really cool if you like time travel stories and if you like history. I feel like the production value is actually pretty high. They go back to the Civil War. They go back to, the 1930s. It's really cool. It's kind of fun. I don't know how I liked it. I don't know like where it's going to go, because already in the first like three episodes, they've seen like JFK and Abraham Lincoln, and the Hindenburg has crashed.
We're going to go back and save Bob.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know, but I like time travel stuff on occasion when it's done right. And they do some neat Flashpoint-esque things with the story where they actually create an alternate timeline where, you know, one of the main characters is now like one of her family members just doesn't exist, which I found fascinating. Like, you know, just completely doesn't exist. I thought that was great.
I held off on this because it looked like a weird mixture of Warehouse 13 and like Blind Spot. Is that what it's called? The tattoo TV show?
There are Blind Spot people involved with this show, which is what initially turned me off of watching it. But
yeah, so I kind of avoided it. I mean, I'll probably check it out at some point when I'm in a lull of other TV. I'm so far behind on a couple of shows that it probably won't be for a little bit. But
well, the thing that I liked as a history nerd, there is a lot of stuff that is historically accurate. Like they do a lot of like, you know, the assassination of Abraham Lincoln. There's a lot of facts and details in the assassination that factor into the episode that like they had to do a lot of their homework in order to actually write the episode that they did. Because there's a lot of like really small, you know, small details that they actually got right, which I thought was pretty cool. So
that's cool.
I thought it was neat, and I'm interested to see where they go. And the fact that the show has money is great too, because they don't really skimp. A lot of time travel shows, they'll be like, "We're in 1942," and it'll be like just like a tiny little bar set that's 10x10. They don't do that with this. They actually have like at least $1,000 to spend on a set, which is pretty cool.
All right. Probably a lot more than $1,000, but yeah.
The other show that I started watching to kind of scratch my old 24 itch is Designated Survivor. Have you three guys checked this out?
I was waiting for you to start watching this show. I wanted to know what Ash's opinion of 24 Volume 2 is.
It is 24 Volume 2. Kiefer Sutherland, this is like the alternate timeline where he, as Jack Bauer, slowly becomes president of the United States. It's actually pretty interesting. You know, the brief concept behind it is that there is a designated survivor when there's ever large meetings where the entire cabinet and basically all the important people in government are together at the same time. In case something catastrophic happens, there'll be someone to take over as the role of the president. It's no surprise that this ends up becoming Kiefer Sutherland as the president, the vice president, and everybody else ends up dying. In a really kind of brutal and catastrophic way. And then Kiefer Sutherland is this very low ranking cabinet official. He's like fucking like Leslie Knope or something. Like he's like the very bottom of the totem pole. And he ends up becoming president of the United States. And it's kind of neat to see the breakdown of government and what happens politically after that. The destruction of the White House, or the destruction of the president and such, isn't the most exciting thing. I think it's really neat to see what happens in the country as a result of this new president taking over. So I think I'm three episodes into that, and I actually kind of liked it. So I recommend that too. Scott, what are you doing?
We were talking offline, and I just want to mention that I think what is really fascinating about the concept behind Designated Survivor, like that's the concept for the entire show. And that's like, you know, at best 1/8 of the concept of Battlestar Galactica. You know what I mean? <That's so true. laughs> And it's like, I feel like I've already seen this plot line before, but I guess there's something else to see. But anyways, let's see. So I've been playing some games, and we'll talk about that. Horde mode is really fun. For some reason, I haven't played Gears in a while. Watching the running animation, like, almost makes me motion sick now, because there's so much camera waggle, which is weird. It's kind of crazy. Let's see. I want to talk about a TV show. Are you guys watching The Good Place?
Yes.
No, I
love it.
Yeah. So, The Good Place is Michael Shore's new show. So he's behind The Office, Parks and Rec, and Brooklyn Nine-Nine. And he created, there's a new show called The Good Place starring Kristen Bell.
Your girlfriend.
Yeah. Kay Bell. And, let's see. And Ted Danson is in it as well.
Yeah. I was going to say.
Yeah.
Feasibly one of the biggest television stars of all time.
Yeah, that's I should have led it with that. But anyways, the idea is that there is a place for people to go when they die, but only like the best of the best people get to go. And then they, they start out by poking fun at like, you know, which religion's got it right and everything. But the show in a way almost reminds me of the quirkiness of... what was that show on ABC with the pie maker?
Pushing Daisies.
Thank you. I had the name in my head until I was trying to say it, but it has like that kind of that kind of quirkiness to it. So it's just like, it's a comedy show. It's like a half hour comedy, but it's not like single camera. It's just kind of like a normal,
right.
Normal comedy, no audience. And and it's just really funny. And it's like, it's a smart show. You know, they do get into a lot of like morality and stuff like that, because they're trying to figure out like, you know, who actually, you know, how people got to this good place. And then there's, you know, an interesting cast of characters, of course, which is what you would expect with one of his shows. And then you just kind of learn about each character and the relationships between them. And that's what makes it good. Probably one of my favorite things in the show is that there is sort of like this AI that is like the helper, like the Siri, I guess, of the good place, called Janice. Or is it Janice or Janet? Janet. It's Janet. And and she's just like deadpan hilarious, because she shows up anytime you need her. And because she's sort of like a, you know, simulated entity, she always gives like really hilarious answers to your questions. So
did you watch the last episode, the most recent?
Yeah, I think we're caught up, but I don't want to like spoil.
I'm not going to say anything about it, but it's a Janet heavy episode, and it's really, really funny.
Yeah, that was that like put me over the edge.
I was like, I need to watch this. This was like my almost watch. I was waiting to hear what you guys thought of it.
It's great. Yeah, it's wonderful.
Yeah, it's so good that I'm afraid that it's going to get canceled. That's kind of like,
I think it's doing okay, actually.
Oh, that's good. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's not doing that bad.
There are some shows
like top rated, but it's
There are some shows like Bad Judge where I'm like, this show is like not good enough and I know it's going to get canceled. And then this show I think is like almost too good, so you're just afraid that it's going to be canceled.
Bad Judge. I forgot we talked about Bad Judge.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also think the critics like it a lot, and being that it's Michael Schur, and both Parks and Recreation and The Office took like a season or two to get its legs. Mm-hmm. I think they may be willing to give him time on this show. So
yeah, I'm just curious to see with the plot that they're unfolding now, like how long the show is actually supposed to be in terms of seasons, but
right. Yeah.
So anyways, let's see. I watched, you know, the documentary that we'll talk about later, and I played the game Virginia, and I started a new game called Toy Odyssey, which is sort of a bizarre, it's not what I thought it was, but it's like a Metroidvania style 2D side scrolling game. And the thing that I did not expect is that it's one of those games that you're meant to sort of like die and replay over and over again, like almost like do you remember Risk of Rain, where it's like a game where you play a little bit and you get some power, and then you try to play again with your like incremental powers, and you kind of just roll over and over again until you can actually, you know, be competitive in the game. So that's interesting, and maybe I'll talk about that in a couple of weeks. So Matt, what is up?
Yeah. I went on like a movie binge this week.
I see that.
And I watched some real classics. I watched the World of Warcraft movie.
I can't. I was like, did he play World of Warcraft?
I can't believe it.
Nope.
I can't believe it.
It is a disaster. That thing
That was not like critically well received, was it?
It's like 2.5 hours long, and I do not know what happened throughout the majority of that movie. Like, plot lines were just crossing and stuff was going on, but none of it really seemed to make any sense. There's like a half orc, half human in it that I thought was the baby that was born in the beginning, but that's not the case. That's just, there's like a baby floating off that they want to make like more movies about, I guess. And it was like, it felt like probably what an adult felt like watching Mortal Kombat in like 93.
Oh, but Mortal like Kombat is a good movie, Matt.
and Duncan Jones is like a good director. I really don't know what happened. I can only assume that it was like, hey, you need to jam all of this content into this movie. We don't know if we're going to do more. And then it just kind of became a mess. The CG is both weirdly very good and very CG, like at the same time. Like,
interesting.
Yeah, there's a lot of moments where you're watching and you're just like, this looks super CG. And then there's other moments where you're like, man, that looks like it could be really an orc walking around in whatever land it was. I couldn't tell you because I don't honestly know where most of it took place. So I watched that. Then I was like, I know what I'll solve that movie with. I'll watch X-Men Apocalypse. This was the same night, P.S. I watched 5 hours of movies back to back. Actually 6.5, because there's another one I didn't write down. So watched X-Men Apocalypse. That was an adventure.
Was it an apocalypse?
It's so weird because they they actually did a couple of things sort of right, and then, but it's another one of those, like, Bryan Singer gets all up in his own storylines, and at a certain point you're just like, what is happening right now? Like, a lot of it kind of felt rushed, but it was, you know, like a 2.5 hour long movie, so like, how is that feasibly possible?
Right.
The villain was like kind of flat, like his powers were really undefined versus the comic. And then like, weirdly enough, Melissa, who doesn't read the comics, was like, can't Apocalypse grow like really big? And I was like, yeah, he's got like a lot of different powers. And just the whole thing was really like uneven. It just felt very weirdly paced and poorly motivated. I think the biggest problem they have. Oh, and by the way, did you know that Magneto's parents died in the Holocaust? Because showed that again.
Are you
for
serious?
Like the fifth time. Yeah.
Boy.
Like, how many times do we need to see this?
Why
origin?
Do we need to reboot his story over and over again?
I do not know. And their timelines are getting really messed up at this point, where it's like, at this point in like 15 years, you know, what's his name? Magneto, the young one. I just blanked on his...
Fassbender.
Yeah. At this point in 15 years, Michael Fassbender is going to turn into Ian McClellan.
Man, something must happen.
It's a real rough 15 years.
Yeah.
Yikes.
He quits like, going to CrossFit and it just fades away.
So ridiculous. Like, McAvoy, like, there's a point where you're like, oh, McAvoy looks like he's aging. Like, maybe that's a thing that he could turn into, you know,
Patrick Stewart.
God damn it, names. But yeah, the one that's hilarious to me is this, like, strikingly handsome man Fassbender is going to turn into Ian McClellan in 15 years. And then, like, there's a Logan cameo, of course, and stuff. But the funniest and weirdest thing about the movie that I'll just mention, because I know it'll piss Ash off and it'll be funny, is they introduce Magneto, and he is working at a steel factory and living on a farm with his wife.
What?
And I'll be honest, maybe there was a timeline in the X-Men that I missed this little factoid about Magneto, but it was pretty great. And then, like, the cops come at one point and they have, like, wooden bows and arrows because I guess they already know he's Magneto or something. And it's just a mess of a movie. So, looking forward to Logan.
I am actually looking forward to Logan, but
we'll talk about it later.
Yeah.
And then I watched 8 Days a Week, the Beatles documentary on Hulu. Oh, have you watched that, Scott?
I have not, but I mean to. Did you like it?
I really thoroughly enjoyed it. They covered some ground that's been covered before, like in other documentaries, but there's a lot of footage that's pretty cool. And then they interview like Whoopi Goldberg and Elvis Costello, these people that you wouldn't even necessarily know were like giant Beatles fans that were at their like earliest concerts and stuff. And just kind of what Beatles mania was and what the Beatles were. And they have a lot of interviews with Paul McCartney and Ringo, and they use some old footage from John and George. And it's done. I mean, it's Ron Howard, so you'd expect it to be at least decent, but nice. It's done really, really well.
It's awesome.
Yeah. And then, catching up on Fall TV, played some Gears. You know, we've talked offline about it, but there's some stuff in Gears that just is starting to feel Gearsy to me that I have to get like back in the swing on. And then I think that's pretty much everything. And then the stuff we're going to talk about later.
Sweet.
So,
yay.
Yeah. News.
All right. So there were a lot of trailers since we last spoke. Three of them came out on the same day.
Yeah.
It was a crazy day.
Yeah.
Mayhem.
So,
the day the internet was happy.
Yeah. The first two that we can talk about are for films, which is, the new trailer for Rogue One. I think that's the second trailer for Rogue One. And then the sort of reveal for Logan, which is really exciting.
Oh, actually, I don't think I watched the Rogue One.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, that one's good, but I feel like we don't really need to talk about it because it's, you know, there's already a trailer.
We're all going to go to the movie theater. Yeah.
Yeah. But
it looks fantastic, though. I mean, that's really all we need to see.
It really does. But Logan is really interesting because it looks very kind of like deconstructed. Is that the right word to use for the character?
Yeah, I mean, they did something similar in the comics with the Old Man Logan series, but it's very interesting to see them take this route with the film, because it kind of does a time jump, and it looks like it's, I don't know, maybe 15, 20 years after the last, like, the last X-Men movie, because Professor X is in it, and he's super old.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but it doesn't look very interesting. Superhero-y, like other superhero films do. This is just kind of like people doing things, you know, like it's very,
yeah, no, it's true. It's like Logan living out in like a ranch someplace and hanging out with Professor X.
Yeah, so. Yeah, so that looks really exciting.
Do you guys want to hear my alternate theory?
Sure.
That Johnny Cash's cover of Hurt can make any trailer look good.
This is factually correct. This is also
awesome. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, like, I think the movie, I'm not trying to be like, oh my, shit on everything. I just have very little faith in the Wolverine anything at all. And while this looks to be the best of it.
Yeah, that's fair.
I also think it's relatively easy to cut together a good trailer and put a great song over top of it. And
of have course. It
look like the movie's going to be really great. So,
yeah, sure.
Yeah, that's true.
I am cautiously not even optimistic. Just like, I'll go because
yeah,
I go every time. But, yeah, I don't know. I think they're doing some cool things. It looks like X-23 is going to be in it and some other fun yeah. stuff. And it's, did you guys see the international trailer?
No, is it?
I did.
Is it different?
It's a red band.
It's not any different. It's except for one part where he puts his claws through a dude's skull. So, oh,
okay.
Yes. Wow. Is it going to be rated R? Thank you, Deadpool.
Yeah. Thank you, Deadpool.
Yeah.
They realize that he can make a lot of money.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's got a lot of potential to be good. I think it's a new director. The writers are super young and like basically first time feature film writers. And then, you know, they're putting in some cool characters and stuff. So hopefully we'll see. Nice. But it also looks like this could be a retcon to remove Wolverine from the singer timeline.
I see.
That would suck. Yeah. Before we do the Nintendo Switch, there's one we forgot, and that's Guardians of the Galaxy 2. We saw a teaser.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Which was fan-fucking-tastic.
It does look fun.
That's cool.
Cannot wait.
I missed that one. I'll need to go see it.
You missed that? Oh, my gosh. You need to see that immediately.
There was also
just like a strung-together vignette of like action sequences, but they all look pretty great.
That sounds great. I mean, that's one of those, like, we're all going to go to the theater anyways, right? So, but I'll
think
watch
all
it.
Of these are. Like, yeah. It's like Rogue One, Logan, and Guardians, you know, like, I'm going to be there for all of that.
And then there was, like, 30 seconds of Red Dead 2, whatever that was. Western Wild West storefronts confirmed for Red Dead 2, you guys.
Are you guys excited? Ready to go canoeing?
Canoeing with, looks like a nice young lady, so you can have a canoe date, which is
fun.
Canoe
so much. It's
all the hipsters do that these days. They go, you want to go canoeing? And they're like, yes.
Yeah.
Let's do that.
I'm sort of expecting the model of GTA 5 with then GTA 5 online. That's kind of what I think the model is for this game.
If that is going to be the case, I'm going to be so happy.
Yeah. Just
so, did this give us any hint that this is the prequel game that had been teased before, or is this going
to
be?
Yes, people believe it is believed to be a prequel because it's like
the prequel,
the whole crew, you know, that he was running with.
Right. I mean, if it's not, I mean, the game pretty much ends. Spoiler alert, you know, with the dawn of a new age.
It's 4 years old.
It's old now, man. I don't even know.
And I don't think anybody would want to play a game as the sun, right? It's just to be.
No.
Yeah. Okay.
No, thank you.
Yep. Okay. Anyways, like, it's a year away. We all know things can change. Games get delayed. We don't know anything about it other than it's coming and it's apparently a prequel. So more on that later.
And canoeing. And stores. And you're really skipping over the things that we did learn in that trailer.
Planes confirmed. Wild West landscapes confirmed.
Horses.
Yeah, horses confirmed. Canoes
there
confirmed.
Are horses. Yep. More horse riding.
So Nintendo Switch. What'd you guys think?
I mean, Scott's just rushing us through these trailers to get to Nintendo Switch. That's all it is.
Oh, well, we have a lot to get to today.
Just pile driving
through. There's a lot. It's going to be a 6-hour episode.
Yeah.
Go for it, Scott. This is your
ball of potatoes.
Okay, yeah. Let's talk about some interesting things about this. So the Nintendo Switch is the new console. The thing that you see immediately is that somebody is playing the game on their television, and then they basically undock a screen from the unit next to
it. We just call it a tablet, right? I mean, essentially.
Yeah, they undock a tablet from the dock that's sitting next to the TV, and then the game transfers onto the tablet. The guy basically takes his controller apart and sticks the sides of the controller onto the tablet so it resembles the Wii U gamepad, and then he's leaving his house and playing in other places. So this to me, even though they say it's not like the successor to the Wii U, it is a successor to the Wii U in the sense that you are now able to take this tablet out of your house. So it is, the tablet itself is the game console, and that's what you can take with you and play your games. It's going to have, they're going back to cartridges, so there's not going to be any discs. So right out of the box,
call them cartridges. This is essentially just flash storage.
I mean, I think they call them cartridges, but it's not going to be compatible with Wii U or 3DS physical media. And when they say physical media, that makes me think like, you know, it could be compatible with digital media, which my hope for this system is that if you own anything for the Wii U digitally, hopefully those games will transfer to the, you know, to the new system through like your Nintendo account or something like that. So hardware wise, the thing that's interesting is that they have these modular pieces for the controller. So like I said, there are basically two, the controller is split in half. If you imagine like a, you know, any traditional controller, like a 360 controller, and you imagine breaking that in half, that's what the controller looks like. And so you can dock that into a, like a grip basically to play normally, or you can dock it, you can break it in half and dock it onto the sides of the screen if you're traveling. There's also going to be a, like a pro style controller, which is like your traditional controller. And the thing that's really interesting is that they showed some scenes in which, one person like took their two halves of the controller, gave one half to another person, and they kind of turned them sideways and played games, you know, like Nintendo style, NES style. You know? So two people were holding these like tiny controllers, which like I can't imagine ever doing this, but you know,
the other scenario they showed that is the same thing where it's like I couldn't imagine doing it is when they had two people bring their own Switches to like a picnic table, and then handed out four controllers. So it was like they took the two pieces off each side, each person, all four of them got half a controller, and then they're playing like NBA 2K17 against each other. And I'm like, I can't imagine being like, hey everybody, here's what we're gonna do, bring your Nintendo Switch.
I'll tell you what is sort of okay about that is that I think what they're trying to convey there is that there may be local network connectivity. So if you can imagine like going to a place, you know, like PAX, in which like someone else has a Nintendo Switch, and you sit down with them and go like, all right, now we're gonna play, you know, Star Fox or something, and you guys fly around together, like that seems like it could be possible, which is exciting.
I think it's like conceptually I think it's cool. It just was like that's when you start thinking about the, like, you're like, oh, that'd be so fun, and then you're like, wait, when and ever in my life have I known somebody else with the, like, even this, like an iPad, like let's both bring our iPads and then we'll all have four controllers. It's just the,
remember that was one of the original things with the iPad, is that you would be able to take your, everyone would sit around with their iPhones and you'd all play like Scrabble together. Like that, that went away very quickly. But, you know, cause like pretty much the best example of that is Space Team, right? But you don't need the iPad to play it. So, but you know, this, fundamentally hardware wise is sort of like the evolution of the Wii U, but conceptually what they're trying to tell you to do with it is very different from what, you know, they were trying to get you to do with the Wii U. So I think their positioning of this product and what they think you will be able to do with it is exciting. I'm excited because you know, when you travel, like just the thought of me being able to take essentially a home console with me to play Zelda while I'm, you know, on a plane or on a work trip or something is very, very exciting to me. Is that something that's interesting to you guys as well?
Yes and no. I think for me, there's two big things that would make me not want to get this. First of all, it has to have a gigantic battery in it. Otherwise, it's going to be utterly useless. The battery life is 3 hours. Mm-hmm. There's no point in owning it.
Yeah, you'll have to lug a charger around with that thing.
You have to lug a charger around, and that's, you know, that kind of defeats the purpose. So hopefully it has a massive lithium ion battery that lasts, you know, a good, you know, 6 to 8 hours would be optimal. I think that'd be great because then you could actually do a long flight with it. Also, it needs to just have a ton of first party titles that are actually worth getting excited about. If it doesn't have great first party stuff, stuff that actual, you know, that first party and third party are designing for, then I think that it's going to be dead in the water. If it's going to just play, you know, a bunch of old crap or only a handful of titles, which is what happened with the Wii U. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's worth it. I mean, you know, it's going to have hopefully a new Star Fox and
a good Star Fox.
Yeah, a good Star Fox and a good Zelda and a good new Mario and basically, you know, all the Nintendo staples, a new Smash, all those things that people just die for, a new Mario Kart. If it has all of those, it's going to sell really well because I think you're right. I think the idea of having a console that you can just throw in a bag and be like, all right, I'm just going to, you know, anytime I'm on a trip or, you know, away from your house for any long period of time, you don't want to bring a system or a big laptop with you. I think that's great.
That can be promising for sure.
Yeah. So I don't know. I'm on the fence. I'm obviously, I haven't, the last Nintendo console that I purchased was a GameCube. So I'm not exactly a big Nintendo guy these days, but I would be if they would do the stuff that I wanted them to do.
I think to answer two of those points, Ash, which with only like a modicum of half a penny's worth of knowledge, Nvidia came out and said that this is the Tegra stuff that powered their Shield, or not the exact same, but like an upgraded version of the Tegra stuff that powered their Shield that they have out. So seemingly the graphics power should be there and the ability to manage battery should be built in, because it's not like Nintendo just out of nowhere decided to become a tablet maker. It sounds like they're sourcing from existing products, you know?
Right.
And then the other is that they don't have to have the race that Microsoft and Apple are in with the tablet world of like, how thin can you make it? How, you know, productive can you make it? Like, they don't have to do any of that. So I would be willing to bet that it's a little bit thicker than an iPad. It probably has a massive battery inside of it and can probably last for a while. Because if you think about an iPad, even gaming on like the newer generation iPads, those last for hours. Like
being wonderful, able to play games. That's what I love about the iPad for sure.
So I have a feeling Nintendo is aware of that, and you know, while they're not Apple, I don't think they're going to make the thinnest, most, you know, beautiful product ever created. It seems like they could make a portable version that has a good battery in it that could last a while, especially if it's built on Nvidia's Shield tech. So
I'm sort of expecting the other thing, something that's like thicker than one iPad mini but thinner than two.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. You know, like that's kind of where I picture it being too. Like somewhere, some small, thinner than a laptop, but thicker than an iPad.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
But the other thing I find really interesting is that this is also, I think, while a lot of people are saying that this is Nintendo innovating, I actually think this is the first time Nintendo isn't innovating. And
yeah, I don't really think they are like they claim to be. You know.
Yeah, but I'm sort of okay with that because I think they let Nvidia with Shield and a few other brands that have done similar type products come out with this type of thing, or you know, even the iPad for in that case. And then I think Nintendo is going to throw, hopefully do what Ash wants and what I want, what I think everybody wants, throw their brand behind it and be like, well, now do you want this kind of gaming? Because Nvidia did Shield and it was just kind of like, well, if there's an Android game, you can play it on here. And while there's a lot more of those now, they're definitely not, it's not of the quality of Zelda or you know, even a Mario game or anything like that. So it'll be interesting. I'm interested in it in the same way. I haven't ever owned a Nintendo product other than Game Boys. But if they were to put out some really great first party titles, and this was truly like a thing when I go to California for a week with nothing to do that I could take with me and play in the hotel room, then I'd probably heavily consider it.
Yeah, to take the console version of Zelda with you, I think is very promising on,
yeah,
you know, on
any right, show. Right.
The only other thing they do, and they do claim to have, third-party support already from a lot of developers. There are screenshots that show like all the logos that they have support from so far, so that's promising too. The only other funny thing about the
as long as it's not like Resident Evil YK,
yeah,
you're
yeah,
like,
yeah,
what the hell is,
yeah, no, we thing? Yeah, we need like mainstream titles for sure, yeah. The only thing that was funny about that trailer was like what I thought was funny was like the end where the woman is sitting in her like apartment that's clearly furnished by like Anthropology, you know, and then her friends on the rooftop, you know, next building over, wave her over to come party with them, and she just like takes her console with her and then tells her friends like, hey, we're all gonna sit and watch me play Nintendo Switch while you guys are drinking on the rooftop. But either way,
that doesn't happen. That happens to me all the time.
No, it doesn't.
Yeah, man. I'm on rooftops all over Brooklyn playing my
right games. Exactly, that's, I thought of that immediately. The only other thing that someone else pointed out that I thought was fascinating is that there are no children in the trailer.
Yeah.
It's all, you know, looks like 21 and up kind of folks that are shown in the trailer. So I think that's also something.
Well, I mean, this does look like a device that I'd be terrified to hand a 7-year-old and let them wander around
so
with.
That's something to keep an eye on as well. So again,
I think there's some usability questions there too. Like the controls look a little weird, but I feel like that'll just, you have to wait till we get it in our hands.
Yeah, until I think people like the three of us will be buying those pro controllers right away.
Right.
And then, you know, maybe other folks will kind of see if the side controllers, the split controllers, what do they call them? Like joy pads or something.
What were they? joystick. Joypad?
I read that they got the technology from another manufacturer whose the word joy is in their company name. So I don't know if those are official titles or not, but hopefully they're not called like Joy-Con or something. We'll see.
Yeah, I think it is Joy-Con. We'll
anyways, let's move on.
Yeah. All right. So big news this week. All your favorite voice actors are currently on strike if they are members of SAG-AFTRA. So there's a big strike going on now. There's for a variety of reasons. I did some digging into it, and the short version is that the rules for voice acting and how much voice actors get paid hasn't changed since the 1990s.
Oh wow!
And the rigor and basically what they are forced to do has changed quite a bit because the amount of voice work in video games has increased exponentially. So essentially, when they go in for a session, typically these days they're going to have to go in for upwards of 4 hours or more at a time without any real rest, and they can actually do harm to their vocal cords. And really all they're striking for is for a bit increased pay and also the ability to take a break after a couple hours, 2 hours. Yeah. So they want the ability to stop after 2 hours to give themselves vocal rest. And they want, of course, increased pay. And it's nothing outlandish. It's totally reasonable what they're asking for. So it's very interesting because every time that this concept of striking pops up and you see that hashtag performance matters, there's people that work in the industry that unfortunately get upset with the voice actors in their community because they say, well, devs are perpetually screwed and have to work overtime and they don't get increased pay and they do crunch and voice actors don't do crunch. And I would just argue that it's two very different things. And I personally feel that developers should also eventually go on strike because they too are getting treated like absolute shit. So the two are not necessarily, they don't have to go hand in hand, and devs don't have to frown upon voice actors for striking. They have their own problems to deal with. So I think this is great. I think voice actors do deserve more. I don't think anything they're asking for is unreasonable. I think we are going to see repercussions of this strike down the road because typically the voicing of the characters and such is done very, very late in a project, like really in the 11th hour. And so a lot of games that already are deep in production may hit a couple speed bumps. So we'll see what ends up happening. I mean, you may see some delays because of this, depending on how quickly this strike is resolved. But, you know, it's no surprise to our listeners that we here at the show are friends with a lot of voice actors and are very supportive of the voice acting community because, you know, speaking for Matt and Scott as well, you know, we kind of feel that games wouldn't be what they are today without incredible, talented voice actors. So I don't think they're asking for anything outlandish. And if you see that hashtag performance matters, you know, retweet it and let people know that, you know, these folks deserve to get paid a little bit more and get treated at least fairly for what they're doing.
Well,
so
said.
They can work safely.
Well said.
Yeah. Yep.
I mean, I think we can all agree that there are certain games that you probably never would have played if you were not aware that a certain voice actor was in it. You know, I can point to a game like Adara, which was like a Windows 10 Surface launch title that had Ali Hillis in it, and that was the only reason I played it. You know what I mean? And I think part of the reason we were so excited for a game like Fuse, which turned out to be a really fun co-op game, was because of the voice cast. So there are numerous other examples as well, but I mean, it, like they say, it does matter.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's gotten to the point where it's one of the first things I check when I see a new title announced. I want to see, you know, who's in it now, because these folks are so talented. And, you know, sometimes you'll sit down and play one of these games, you know, for instance, a Mass Effect game, and you'll spend, you know, hundreds of hours in this franchise listening to these people talk. And, you know, the fact that they get paid essentially scale for this work. And at this point, one of the things that they're striking for is they want to, if a game sells more than 2 million copies, they want to get paid a little bit extra. It's actually not a lot. I looked into it, what they're asking for. It's only, you know, they're basically wanting to get paid for every 2 million copies that it sells. I want to believe it's like another day's worth of work. So they're not getting like millions of dollars. It's literally one day's extra pay for every 2 million copies of a game sold. And it's hard to sell 2 million copies of a game. Most games don't do that. So these folks are not asking for, you know, piles of money. They're asking for, you know, just stuff to keep food on the table. And another thing you have to realize is, as a voice actor, you don't have health insurance. That's something you pay for yourself. You're basically self-employed.
And you get health insurance through the union that's fighting for them right now.
Right, right. But you basically, you know, you are your own boss. And so you have, you know, you're doing everything on your own. It's not like you're working for a large organization, right? So, you know, something to keep in mind.
Yeah, I'm going to make, we'll cut from this really quick, but three really quick points were that the SAG-AFTRA and the Writers Guild, both the East and West, are two, to me at least, of the better guilds that don't seem to just fight for frivolous junk all the time. Unions, rather, that fight for, you know, seemingly good things for their workers, because the hours can be really long, and the stuff that goes on there is behind the scenes isn't always the glamorous, you know, Hollywood or whatever we want to put out front of everybody. So I think when these kind of fights come along, they're usually not for the biggest name voice actor you've ever heard. A lot of times it's for people who are younger in the industry or who are doing 9-10 jobs and overworking themselves to try to get through stuff. So it's interesting a lot. And then the other point I was going to make is that my favorite quote about this stuff is from Jason Alexander, who played George Costanza. And they famously went on a big strike. I guess it's a little different than a full guild strike, but they went on a strike from Seinfeld, because like 3 or 4 seasons in, they were still getting paid basically what they were getting paid in season one. And so they were all like, look, we want more money. You know, this is how this, you guys are making literally hundreds of millions of dollars off this show. Like, we want to get cut into this. And people got really mad because the studio successfully kind of spun it as them being money hungry and them being like going after something that they didn't deserve. Jason Alexander's response was like, it's not like these studios make all this money and then donate it. Like, where do you think the money's going? Like, they're taking it and like either invest, maybe they're investing in other games in the best cases, but otherwise people are just, there's other people getting rich off of these people's work, you know? So it's always a really interesting point, but I think it's this one is so much smaller scale, and I think a little bit easier to understand. You put it really well. So,
yeah, well, good, let's luck, hope it everybody. Works out for everybody.
Yeah, luck to all of our friends out there. You're doing a strike is not easy. So, then the last thing is the internet shutdown this week. Did you guys notice?
Yeah,
totally. I actually did. Yeah. I was like, "What is going on with my internet?" And it turns out it was everybody.
It was like internet. Twitter and Netflix were down for a lot of people. PlayStation went down around the same time.
Yep, a lot of huge brands all used one, or use, they probably use multiples, but all use one DNS routing system called DIN, which is like a giant, DNS is like
a phone book.
Yeah, when you type a URL into a browser, it takes that URL and it hits a DNS server, which then says, oh, I know what that is. That URL is actually pointing at this internet address, and then it points it to what's called an IP, and then that IP kind of like returns the stuff that you went to in the web browser. But so if you shut down a DNS server, which is what happened, essentially no one can get to the service that they're trying to get to without knowing the actual IP address of the thing that you wanted to hit. So it'd be the equivalent of like telling your phone to call your buddy Scott versus like dialing the phone number in specifically. So yeah, this is kind of a giant deal, because the way they did it is come out that at least part of what they did was use what's called the Internet of Things, which is connected cameras and, you know, devices to mount a denial of service attack, which is essentially where you have a wall of traffic hit a server all at once and the server chokes, can't hold up and falls over. And they did this with some software that was written a little while ago that pretty much no one knows how to solve or fix. It's not a thing that can be fixed.
Wow. Awesome.
Wow. Unbelievable.
Yeah. There's apparently like one company that makes a lot of like internet connected devices, like cameras and stuff in China. And the interior of this camera has like a hardwired password on it. So if you can find these cameras on a network, you can actually root into them with this password if you have it. And hackers essentially got a list of these passwords and logins and are able to kind of take control of this camera and then have that camera send traffic at a server all kind of distributed at the same time. And that's essentially what happened. And they're saying that it can keep happening and that there's not much they can do about it, because in order to fix it, the manufacturer would have to like get the hardware back. Like it's not a software patch that can happen.
That's crazy.
Unbelievable.
So even if you have some of these devices and they were like completely up to date, there's no, you're still part of the problem.
And they're going to look at me in my underpants, turn my camera on.
Oh, well, they're doing that already.
They're going to see my tidy whities.
Yeah. So anyways, this is like, you know, levels of terrifying much larger than AT&T buying Time Warner, because no one had ever attacked a DNS server before, successfully at least. And to take down a DNS server shows like one of the biggest choke points of the internet, which is, hey, if you hit this thing, then no one can hit the service that they're trying to hit.
It worked. Meaning that, it was like, down for like hours.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, they took them down for like 2 hours. They came back online for about an hour, and then another attack hit and took them down for another like 3 or 4 hours. So
I was pissed. I couldn't tweet, man. It's serious business.
Nobody could.
And then it was up and down all day. I actually didn't lose connection to Twitter, which means I'm probably hitting a different DNS server that didn't go down. But everyone that I knew in Florida apparently hit it, because I heard news from a few different people that were like, oh yeah, I couldn't hit anything. Yeah, I don't know. This is scary.
I just imagine
I agree.
I just imagine that you, when they did this, they were, you know, kind of floating through a 3D visualized world of like a server city, you know?
Oh yeah.
And then like Leonardo da Vinci, like his face came up and was like, row your boat. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That's how it works.
Rolled by on your skateboard. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just everyone got on their phones at the same time at the pay phones and just started like sending traffic to the servers, and then the boat almost
cookie,
tipped over.
You idiot.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's how they fixed it. They just typed cookie and sent a flu shot into the server.
So totally
fixed it. Yeah. I don't know. We'll see. So this is scary stuff. Let's talk about some fun stuff.
Cool.
All right, so the first film we are going to talk
about.
Hold
on, let's set the theme here, right? What do we do?
Okay, so we set a task out. Yeah, so I was like, hey, it's going to be Halloween soon. We're getting close to episode 250, but let's do our horror Halloween episode prior to episode 250. So I said, hey, let's try and play a horror-themed game and watch a horror-themed movie this week, and that's what we did. So
yes.
So here we go. So the first one is a film called The Greasy Strangler. I asked our community to send me names of films for me to check out. And everyone said I should watch Lights Out, but I couldn't get Lights Out because it was like $15 just to watch. And I was like, I ain't paying no $15. So I opted for the $3.99 rental, which was The Greasy Strangler.
How did you pick this film?
So I actually had read an article about this film a little while ago, and it sounds like it's just a weird garbage throwaway kind of trauma-esque film, but it actually has gotten quite a bit of press. It was rated as Rolling Stone's most disgusting film of 2016. Okay. And it actually made its way all the way to the Sundance Film Festival and, got picked for a number of film festivals. So this was a festival. I don't want to say darling, because no one would call this film a darling, but it made its way to festivals. So I'm going to read the blurb of what this film is. It says Ronnie runs a disco walking tour with his browbeaten son, Braden. When a sexy, alluring woman named Janet comes on the tour, it begins a competition between father and son for her attention. It also brings about the appearance of an oily, slimy, inhuman maniac who stalks the streets at night and strangles the innocent, soon dubbed the Greasy Strangler. This is probably one of the most uncomfortable films I've ever sat through in my entire life. First of all, if you have problems with people eating at all, like close-ups of people eating.
I can't handle
that. Oh my God, Scott. Okay, so the main guy, Ronnie, is older. He's probably in his mid-70s. And you see Ronnie buck-ass naked through like half this movie. So you see his
I'm actually watching the trailer now, but I'm not listening to it. I'm just watching it, and it's ridiculous.
Oh my God. So Ronnie, not only is he buck-ass naked through half the movie, there are points of the film where you actually see his real butthole. You see his real butthole, and he wears a gigantic prosthetic cock through the entire movie that he just like takes out and like waves around. It looks like a demon phallus. It's disgusting. So there's this old 70-year-old guy with this giant demon penis who's just like walking around. And he eats everything he eats. He just demands that it's like covered. He's like, give me more grease. Give me more grease. And like
gross.
So he just takes like bagels and covers them with like bacon fat. And just you watch him eat them in like slow motion. Right. So you're watching all this disgusting stuff happening. And it just makes you feel like so horrible. But then you realize like there are humans on our planet that are like this.
Yeah.
Oh, that's like, you know, it's like you feel bad because you're like, oh man, like this guy is really gross and like his lifestyle is really gross. But then you're like, oh, this is like, these are like real, like these people could be real people, right? So a little bit about what the movie is about. It feel like it sounds like a trauma film, but visually it's actually very well shot. It's a very good looking film. Unfortunately, all of the subjects like on the other side of the lens are insanely hard to look at. Like it you feel like a bad person, but everyone that they have, that all of the actors are purposefully just as, it's very unflattering. I'll just put it that way. Right. Mm-hmm. And there's the gratuitous,
that, like, the clothes are wearing, the way that it's shot, like all of it. Yeah.
Right. All of it's very unflattering. Right. And like I said, it's very, you know, it's very gratuitous and just disgusting. It's like everyone's really oily and sweaty. And there's all these like really awkward sex scenes between people that like you don't ever want to watch them have sex, right? You're just like, I'm watching.
I saw one of those.
Yeah, and you're like, I'm watching this, and it's like a lot longer than it needs to be, and like you're just like, why am I watching these people have sex? But what is the movie about? What is The Greasy Strangler about? So
now matter. That
I've gotten this off my chest, it is about a father and son competing for the love of a woman who they meet on their disco walking tour. And the son is always sort of vying for his father's attention. And spoiler alert, it turns out his father is the Greasy Strangler. And his father dips himself in a vat of grease.
Oh, my God.
And he covers himself head to toe with grease. And he takes all his clothes off. And he has this big demon penis. And then he wanders the town and he strangles people to death. But when he dips himself in the vat of grease, he loses control and he becomes this sort of ogre-like character that makes goat sounds. And so he goes slopping around town. And when he strangles you, he has superhuman strength and your eyeballs pop out.
Oh my God.
And then what he does is he eats your eyeballs and he dips your eyeballs in grease.
Fantastic.
And it's the story of Ronnie and his son, Braden, and their relationship together. And the Greasy Strangler strangling people.
Wow.
Now, there are a couple good things I have to say about this film. One.
Oh, really?
Good things. One, I have never felt more uncomfortable watching a movie to the point where it made me sick to my stomach. I've seen thousands of horror films, and this was horrific in a different way. It was seeing parts of the human anatomy and parts of people that I just don't want to see. And that was what was really horrifying to me. It wasn't the gore. There's gore in it. It was just like seeing like an old man's butthole. Like, I don't want to see that. Right. So that was horrifying. The cinematography was great. I actually really loved the score. It has this weird synth, like Moog soundtrack that I think Scott would really, really like, to be perfectly honest.
Can I hear the soundtrack without seeing the film?
Yes, you can. Okay. Although I told Scott this before you got here, Matt, I would pay to watch Scott watch this because I would just,
oh my God, it sounds terrible.
But anyway, the soundtrack is really, really great. You know, I wouldn't recommend The Greasy Strangler, to anyone on the planet, unless you just really, it's like 100 minutes long and it's really, really hard to survive. But I would say if you want to, like, if you want to, like, play a prank on someone, tell them that this is your favorite film and that they have to see it.
Oh my gosh.
And then tell them, like, you really need to see this movie, and then have them, you know, sit through the movie and then be like, well, what'd you think? Because, oh my God, because it is just a fucked up experience. But yeah, so I picked that one.
Yeah,
there we go.
Good job. Good job.
I don't know that I had a better time.
Victor Frankenstein's that good, huh?
I ran out of time to watch Conjuring 2, and I wanted to, and I didn't get to, because it's another movie that's like 2+ hours long, which is crazy, people. Come on. Let's get back to the days of the hour and a half movie. So I had time to watch Victor Frankenstein. I was like, all right, I'm gonna do this. I've got this movie. Let's watch it. Can't be as bad as everybody says. We'll follow the plot first. The plot is Igor is, or Harry Potter, Daniel Radcliffe, plays the character of Igor. And the story is supposed to be told from his point of view of how Victor Frankenstein becomes the Dr. Frankenstein of lore, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so it starts out, and Igor is this nameless hunchback in a circus, and he's just kind of beaten up and stuff. The director, I'm not super familiar with. He did that movie Push, if you guys watched that one, the superpower Push.
Oh, the Chris Evans movie?
Yeah. Okay. And I don't know about his other movies, but good Lord, he wants to be Guy Ritchie in this movie. Like, there's like monologues over top of like montage scenes, and then there's like kind of fast, witty dialogue, and then like but that's a time for another, you know, like there's like weird cutouts from narration that like are supposed to cut into the movie and stuff, but they don't quite pace like a Guy Ritchie movie. And the action's not really there. So basically, Igor, or he's nameless at this point, is he's this hunchback. He's working for a circus. And then, Victor Frankenstein shows up to buy animal parts and notices that this hunchback is actually a medical genius. Through, I don't know, a series of events that unfold, and you're kind of like told through narration that he's a medical genius who has studied something, I guess, at a circus. They don't really explain how he becomes a medical genius, but he is. And then so he plucks them out of the circus, and they escape. Someone's accidentally murdered in the process, even though neither one of them murdered this character. And then they take off, and then Igor lives with Frankenstein. And they kind of like change his appearance a little, and he fixes his hunchback. And then he's like standing upright so that Daniel Radcliffe doesn't have to hunch for an entire movie, I assume. And then like one of the girls, they save a girl at the circus who like Daniel Radcliffe's character was in love with. And then she just like appears in the city later as she's still the same character, but in a totally new role. And they just explain it away with one line. They're like, oh yeah, that guy hired me out of the circus, and I dance at a cabaret now. And you're like, okay. Which is, I mean, kind of how the whole movie goes. Like, something will happen, and then they're just like, oh, yeah, that happened because he had a penny once, and then he dropped it, and he found it again, and then now he's with that guy. And you're like, like, everything happens through explanation from another character, or like from like three lines of dialogue that they just give you, because they show you nothing. It's like, it really feels like a movie that was an hour and a half that was meant to be like 3 hours long, and half of a movie out of it.
Yikes.
Because the people who made it were probably like, look, man, we're barely going to get people in the theater for this. Just get it down to an hour and a half.
Oh, man.
And then it really follows this kind of like uneven paced story of the two of them discovering how to recreate life, and create this Frankenstein monster, which isn't actually what they create throughout the whole movie. And then at the very end, there's like a Frankenstein monster from like a third plot that opens up halfway through the movie. A new character shows up that you're not told who he is at all.
Okay.
And he acts like an asshole. And then you're like, am I supposed to know who that, like, it's very baffling. Like, Melissa and I both were like, am I supposed to know who this guy is? Why is he being such a dick? And then they were like, he's rich. And you're like, oh, What? Like, it was just very, they just explained things with like a line and then they would try to move past it. Mm-hmm. I'm having a hard time explaining it because the movie is borderline unexplainable. It's very weird in its pacing and its plot and its characters. I'll give you this though. I feel like you could give James McAvoy any script and he would act the living shit out of it, no matter what it is. Like, he will act as if this is the greatest piece of like Shakespearean writing that's ever been created. And he'll throw down like you wouldn't believe. Like, he commits to his character no matter what baffling line is coming out of his mouth at that moment. It's like spittle's coming out of him and he's like intense and his eyes are narrow and you're like, man, this guy is in this role right now. Like, he's all over it. Like,
I kind of feel the same way about Daniel Radcliffe though. Is that true of this film?
I don't, other than Swiss Army Man, I'm not sure that I've ever seen him act in anything.
But I mean, like, just all the, he's been in so much weird stuff since Harry Potter, you know what I mean? Like, it just seems like he's really like, just give me crazy stuff. I want to do something different, you know?
Yeah, but I don't know if he's like of a caliber of actor that James McAvoy is, mm-hmm. as I guess I'm saying. Mm-hmm. Like, McAvoy, like, is a good actor. He just keeps playing Professor X and Victor Fred. Like, I don't know why he's doing these things, but
he's
a fantastic actor. Whereas Radcliffe is like, I think he did an interview where he was like, I made more money than I ever need for the rest of my life. I'm just going to do whatever roles I feel like, which is like more power to him. That's good for
him.
He's
very honest. He has that nice British honesty about him.
Which
you can appreciate. Yeah.
But yeah, the movie is just a train wreck. Like, it is, I can see it. Wasn't it like one of the biggest bombs of the year or whatever? Like, it was made for like $80 million and then made like $10 million in the theater or something.
Ouch. Yeah.
But if, you know, if you can see it for free and you've got an hour and a half to absolutely kill, I'm just really bummed I didn't see Conjuring 2, because Conjuring 1 was like my favorite horror movie in a long time.
That's too bad.
So I saw that. It was a movie. Frankenstein's in it, like, towards the very end for like a minute and a half, what I guess is supposed to be Frankenstein, although, stuff happens.
All right.
I feel like I should probably just spoil this movie, because none of you should watch this, but it's fine. I'll let it hang.
Just in case. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's fine. Well, you know, if you really love, if you want to see James McAvoy just like chew the shit out of some scenery and like really throw some batshit lines out there that are like, but you believe him, you know, like, you're like, in that moment, he is Victor Frankenstein. You're like, yeah, McAvoy, then watch it. That's all it's worth.
All right,
man. I watched two McAvoy movies this week. I just realized
you really did.
I watched it.
Yeah.
Too.
So I played a game. I don't do well with horror, but I tried to play along to the best of my abilities. So I played a game called Virginia, which got some buzz, I think, a couple of months ago. But it's, I would describe it sort of as a thriller, if you will. And Virginia is, it's mostly a interactive movie. You know what I mean? So if you are into games that are like, you know, Firewatch or Gone Home, or you know, those games where you're kind of just like walking the character through the narrative and you're sort of participating, but you're not really totally influencing the things that happen in the game. That's kind of what you know, what the type of, you know, player that Virginia would appeal to. So just to get that right out of the way, people, it's a story about this person who becomes an FBI agent, and her first case on the job is an internal investigation. And so she partners up with somebody who is the person that she is investigating, and then they are together investigating a different case of a missing person. So there's sort of like layers of plot that come out like right away in the story of the game. People sort of say that this game is sort of like the director, what's his name, like Lost Highway,
David Lynch.
Thank you. People have used that to sort of describe the weirdness of it. People have also said like it's like Twin Peaks, you know, and it's like weirdness of what happens. And so without spoiling too much of it, I've also seen like True Detective season one kind of thrown around too as like a, you know, like a touchstone. Okay. A touchstone for like the kinds of things that happen in this game. But it's as you might expect based on the things that I just said to you, you know, as they're investigating this case, weird stuff happens, right? So, and then I'll just leave it at that plot wise, because anything after that would kind of ruin what's happening. The animation is kind of interesting because a lot of the models in the game kind of have this like weird flat dullness to them. It's almost as if you were watching like a 3D rendered version of another world, you know, that old game that I really like, where everything's kind of like polygonally flat-ish, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But somehow they make the characters like really expressive, and doing like less is more is kind of the approach. The music in the game is incredible. So if you want an example of how to tell a really great story just through music alone, the music was performed by like the Prague Symphony Orchestra or something like that. So it's like really incredible. It's like a full score, which helps because there's no dialogue in the film at all, or in the game. Sorry, I just called it a film. There's no dialogue in the game at all. Everything that you learn about the story is sort of told through the actions and the expressiveness of the characters, which I think is kind of awesome too. So, you know, that might be a turnoff for some people because there's no voice acting, but you kind of experience the game through like the score of the film and like your own participation in, you know, in the character's story. So I really liked it. I was sort of confused by the narrative.
Sounds like an art piece, which I think is very interesting for a game. It's like, I don't feel like that's done very often. It sounds like they took a lot of big risks, right? First of all,
absolutely,
you know, making it non-voiced, making it very little interaction, you know, giving it, of course, a female protagonist, I think is really cool. Not that that's a huge risk, but it can be in terms of sales.
Her partner is also a female agent as well. So I thought that was really refreshing as well. Yep.
Right. Very interesting.
I think that's very fair to say it was an art game, because I thought of that as well while I was playing it. And maybe to your point, without saying too much about the game, if you are the type of person who gets angry by like getting to the end of something and not exactly knowing what happened, then this is not a game for you. I played through the game twice because I wanted to kind of like try to see things that I didn't see the first time around, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
And try to make more sense of like what was going on in the game. And I think it's very possible to play through this game and sort of miss the entire point of the game. And so it's just something to consider when you're trying to think about whether or not you should play this game. I think people should play this game because I think they did a really great job. And, you know, like I said, just that opening 5 minutes alone with the score of the game, like really just sets the tone for the whole experience. It's not very long. You could probably play through the game, you know, like in a couple of hours if you're rushing through it, or maybe like 3 to 4 hours if you're really taking your time to kind of like figure everything out. But I thought it was, it's really cool and really interesting, and it's a thriller, but it makes you think. So that's Virginia.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yep.
Well, on the totally opposite end of the spectrum,
I'm really curious about this game.
I played a game called Hello Neighbor. This is actually one of the things that made me think of doing a Halloween horror episode, because I want to say about 3 weeks ago, we got a press release from Tiny Build about this game, and they gave us pre-alpha access to Hello Neighbor. And they said, there's no embargo. You can talk about it. You can, you know, play it, do whatever you want. So we actually got pre-alpha access. And now actually it's available. If you go to helloneighbor.com, you can actually play an alpha build, which is available to the public. So you just have to sign up for their newsletter and you get to try out the game. But I'll read the tagline of what this game's about and then kind of dive into it. It says, you move into a brand new suburb and notice your neighbor is hiding something in his basement. The only logical thing to do is to break into his house and figure out what he's hiding. Awesome. It's kind of a game version of that old Tom Hanks movie, The Burbs, where you're just trying to like see what's on the other side of the wall and see what your neighbor's up to. It's actually really, really fun. I really enjoyed it. Mechanically, it's a first-person game. It's a stealth game. And it is Pixar-esque, so the characters are kind of cartoony. And you're essentially trying to sneak into your neighbor's house and discover what is, in fact, in that basement and see what they're hiding, right? And the thing that's neat about it is the mechanics are really simple. So there's like an open mechanic, a use mechanic, and I think like a pick up and throw mechanic. And what you're doing is trying to kind of navigate into this guy's house, break into his house, and then kind of make your way down into the basement without alerting him. If you alert him, he'll run up behind you and strangle you and kill you, and then it starts over.
Oh my God.
But the thing that's really cool is it has a procedural AI. So every time that you do stuff, the AI actually learns from your actions and makes it a little bit more challenging. So for instance, the first time I played, I picked up, I think, an apple, and I threw it against the window of the house and kind of hid in the bushes. And then I waited for the evil guy, the neighbor, to come out and check to see what the noise was. And then when he ran outside, I ran past him and I ran into the house, and I actually tried to close and lock the door behind me to lock him out, but that didn't work. And so I ran into the house and started turning off all the lights to kind of hide. And he walked back and actually started to go back and watch a Spanish soccer game, which I thought was hilarious. So he's in the other room. I'm like sitting in the kitchen, like in the dark, and I heard him like walk past, and the audio is really great. It's really spooky with headphones. You hear him walk past into the next room, and then he turns on the game and you hear the people playing soccer. And I'm like, okay, like he's playing stuff, and he's not going to hear me kind of rummaging around. So I'm going through his house, trying to like get deeper and deeper into the house. And eventually I think I turned on a light and it made a popping sound, like the bulb burst. And you hear his footsteps like running down the hallway after you. You're trying to run from him, and all of a sudden he just comes up behind you and strangles you, and you die. It's very, very tense. Like, it sounds silly, but like sneaking into someone's house and like looking around is a weird, it scratches this weird creepo itch that I have. Yeah,
like, absolutely.
Like, and I did the same thing even in like games like Skyrim, where you're actually using your stealth and sneaking into people's houses and stealing belongings. There's something really fun and exciting about that. So I really enjoyed Hello Neighbor. It is still in its pre-alpha stage, so it's very, very early. There's at this point no like levels, there's no progression, there's no carrot on the stick to really keep playing. Other than, you know, the enjoyment of being a sneaky weirdo. But if it's something that you are interested in, even in its pre-alpha state, I think it's fun. You can check it out for free right now as helloneighbor.com. And then if you sign up, you get access to the level I was just talking about and kind of try it out for yourself. So I think it's a very interesting sort of stealth horror experience.
Yeah, that's really cool. That's really neat that you bring up the sort of the mental aspect of it, because like when you're doing that, there's no justification for you to be like in someone else's house sneaking around. Like, there's no way to explain that away. So
right,
as soon as you get caught in that scenario, there's just like you're screwed basically. And I think that's what creates that tension. That sounds really interesting. It's an interesting premise for a game.
It's something that no one should ever do, right?
Like,
right.
Yeah.
Like, no matter how creepy your neighbor is, you should never lure them outside and then creep around inside their house. Mm-hmm. So it's and that's really what the press release really drew me to the game, because I was like, this is a fucked up concept for a game. Like, you're creeping into your neighbor's house to like discover their secrets, which I never got far enough in the game that I discovered any secrets. I'm really curious. I do want to get further to see like what this guy's hiding, just because I think it's exciting.
Amazing.
So good stuff. Check it out. Hello Neighbor.
Awesome. So when we started talking about doing this, I was having difficulty figuring out what horror game to play. So I started looking up a bunch and seeing if they got, without reading any reviews, just seeing if they were decently reviewed, you know? And I found one called The Bunker. Have you guys heard of this?
Interesting too. No, I just started looking at it, and is it all live action?
It is FMV all the way through.
That's nice.
But it is. I think my elevator pitch for this game would be if Telltale made an FMV full motion video game about either like Munchausen by proxy or what's the one where you get programmed to think it's good even though it's terrible?
Stockholm Syndrome. Yep.
Like, if Telltale made an FMV game about Munchausen by proxy or Stockholm Syndrome, set in the world of Fallout, this would be The Bunker. So it is not a long game. You can play probably the whole thing in like 3 to 4 hours, although I think it is replayable because there's some choices you could make and kind of change a little bit, seemingly, how the path goes. But you play as a character who was born in a bunker pre or post nuclear fallout, and in England, and it kind of jumps forward to your 20s, and your mom is dying, and you're with her, and all of a sudden you're the last survivor left in this bunker, and you get this like checklist that you're just supposed to run through each day, and you run through it like two or three times, and on the second or third time, a system fails, and you've actually never left. Well, as an adult, you've never left the floor that you're on.
Oh, okay.
And so then you have to kind of venture out. He has like this panic attack. The acting is really, really well done. Like it's super, it's like not distracting full motion video. Like you just kind of end up being this character. And you then have to go down into this bunker, and there's like four more levels you have to kind of explore, while trying to figure out how to fix the systems that have gone offline, and kind of the story unwraps from there. And it's really boring for the first like 10 minutes.
Okay.
Cause it's just like starting up, and you're kind of like, is this horror or is it? Cause it's not as scary with the full motion video, because like, you know, you're kind of aware that while there can be jump scares, it's not like you're going to, your death can't, it's not like 3D where you're like, you could die from a jump scare. Do you know what I mean? Like it's unlikely full motion video that that's going to happen. So there's a lot of quick time events, which is kind of how you play through the game, but it is sort of akin to Scott's, where you're sort of just navigating a movie, navigating a narrative. Mm-hmm. But it's super well shot. The acting is like killer. The soundtrack is really, really good. It does a really, really good job of making you feel sort of trapped and compressed in this space. Like things are frightening because of how it's shot. Ash, I think you would actually really like it due to like whoever shot it, whoever created this is clearly a horror fan, because they do a lot of takes that are like straight out of like horror film shooting lore or whatever. Like
awesome
close-up shots of like over the shoulder, or like right at, like close-up shots of the face with just like glimpses over the shoulder, where it's like you feel like compressed into this space, and weird disorienting like room views, and like they use lighting really successfully.
It sounds like it's really good.
I kind of started it off not loving it, and like maybe a quarter of the way through, I played it front to back in one sitting, and a quarter of the way through I was like absolutely hooked. The biggest negative by far that I will give this game, which is not, it's only a negative in how you view this, is that it is $20 and it's like a 4-hour game. It's not a long game.
Yeah.
But even at $20, like this game must have cost an arm and a leg to shoot and make and like edit and put together, because it's the value, like the actual
the production value.
Production value, yeah, is just like through the roof. It's done very, very well.
It sounds there are very some fascinating because it's FMV.
Yeah, there's some moments that are meant to be more horror-ish that maybe play a little flat at times, but the unraveling of the story and like how it's done is done. I really, really loved it. Like I actually thought this was great. And then at the end, I watched all the credits, and they shot in an actual nuclear bunker in England. Like a decommissioned nuclear bunker that they shot in. So it is a real place that they went to. And there's all these little kind of like there. I feel like there could have been a little bit more to explore, but I actually know I didn't explore the whole thing, because they have this mechanic of these kind of wooden people that you've carved as a kid. Like you carved out all these little like toys for yourself. Uh-huh. And there's a mechanic that you can collect them. And I only got 6 out of 9. So there's clearly rooms that I just never even made it into, because they're just kind of laying on the floor. So I must have missed 3 places, I guess, that I just didn't know I could even get into, or whatever it might be. Well, and then there's some choices that it seems like you could kind of path different ways through this. So, yeah, the game's called The Bunker. It's put out by a British studio that I don't think has done anything else. But the soundtrack is great. The game is great. Like, I really, really thoroughly enjoyed it. I don't feel ripped off at $20, but I know some people kind of equate time of gaming to value of money, I guess, you know, mm-hmm. like that.
Right, right.
Which is legitimate. I'm not like delegitimizing it. I'm just saying that like if you're that kind of person, you'll probably be a little bummed with this, but quality wise, like this nailed it. Like I really was hooked and really, really enjoyed it. So
that's awesome.
And I did the same thing. I played with headphones on and kind of like zoned in on my screen. So yeah. The Bunker.
That sounds really interesting. I think I'm gonna put that on my list to check that out.
Yeah. Three good games and two not so great movies.
Yeah, yeah. Good movies.
Well, maybe we'll close with a good movie then, sort of.
Go for it.
Yes.
Yeah. And maybe since I didn't actually review a horror game, if you need a recommendation, go back and play Layers of Fear, because that will scare the poop out of you. So I talked about that on an earlier podcast.
Yeah.
Okay. So the film that I decided to watch, I have a reason for watching this film, but I watched a documentary called Raiders, the story of the greatest fan film ever made. Have either of you
been sitting on Netflix for a while? I haven't watched it.
Okay. Okay. I know Ash has seen this, right?
Yeah, I have.
Ash. Okay. So what this is that it tells the story of three kids that sort of met following like the release of Raiders of the Lost Ark, and they decided to do a shot for shot remake of Raiders of the Lost Ark in like 1981.
Oh, that's cool.
So and it just gets crazier from there. So over the course of like, they were like 11, right? So over the course of I think 8 or 9 summers, they would get together every summer, spend their entire summer doing the shots. So not only did they commit to doing this film summer after summer after summer, they also aged as the as they were shooting the movie. So like if you see the film, if you're able to see the film, which I think you can now, and they shot it out of order, right? So it's like in one scene they'll be 11, in another scene they're like 18, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And and like you're like, okay, that sounds cool. But once you really start to think about like everything you need to sort of do and sacrifice to make that happen, it becomes a very interesting premise for a documentary, and that's kind of what Raiders is about. So
I think it's a fantastic documentary,
yeah,
by the way.
Yes.
Just because it delves into not only the making of it and some of the crazy stuff that these kids did, like lighting each other on fire and shit. It also delves into what the kids were going through and divorces and, their life changing over the course of those years. So it gets very, very personal, which I found really great.
Yeah, the arc for the documentary is that they shot every single scene in the film except for the airplane scene. So if you're familiar with Raiders, it's like where the fight is and like the plane explodes at the end and everything. The premise of the documentary is that they decide that they're going to sort of get everyone together one last time and go and film the airplane scene, and then their film will like finally be finished and they can sort of move on. But you know, at this point obviously they're all like in their, you know, maybe 40s or mid 40s or something like that, I guess, according to the math. They all have jobs and families and whatever else, right? So like the reason why I watched this film is that the guy that plays Belloc and who's the director of the film, Eric Zala, actually worked for him a long time ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he was like my boss's boss when I was in QA. So I remember because I was working there. He wasn't there too long, but he was the director of the department. And one day he sits everyone down and goes, I'm leaving. And the reason why I'm leaving is because when I was a kid, I shot for shot remake of Raiders. And now like we have an opportunity to like go and do a documentary and like, you know, present this at film festivals and stuff. And he's like, so peace out. And we're like, what? And it was actually then at the time, and this was like, I think back in like 2005, I actually saw the film like back in 2005. So, I've been aware of it since
the actual
then.
Film,
the yeah, actual, yeah. Their actual like VHS cassette tape of Raiders. And, so I've kind of been carrying this with me the whole time. And when the documentary came to Netflix, I was like, oh my God, I need to see this. And I need to tell everyone about it because, like no joke, these kids started when they were 11 and the film is actually pretty good. Like Ash was saying, like, you know, in the scene where the bar catches on fire, they like lit a house on, you know, they lit their cellar on fire and almost burned their house down, you know, like they met up with this guy who's like this like really weird dude. And he was like in charge of special effects and like cinematography, and like he was like crazy and, you know, got the other two dudes into trouble. And you know, the guy that plays Indy, it was sort of like his idea, and he kind of like roped everyone in the first place and kind of got everyone motivated to do it. And if you think about it, it's like when you're 11, you don't have any money, and they couldn't go see the movie on DVD, so they basically did it all from memory, and they had to, like, you know, ask their parents for like the jackets and like, you know, the hat and a whip and like all this, all the stuff that you need. They needed like a Jeep, and you know, they needed to make like Nazi uniforms, like all this weird stuff, and their parents just like let them do it, you know, in the whole so the documentary,
the 80s, man, that was like, it's the whole Stranger Things, like, you know, like that's what the 80s. I was actually talking to my wife about that today. Like, we used to just like ride our bikes and like shoot BB guns and just run around, and like, you know, like no one gave a shit. It was a very different time.
They actually,
I would be gone for like hours at a time.
Right. As like a 7-year old.
Without any parental supervision. Just gone. No one knew where I was.
It's crazy, man. And they actually do mention like how they felt like they were the Goonies, like just making this film. You know, they just felt they were sort of like outcasts, and this was a way for them to, you know, escape the realities of their life, because they were going through some heavy stuff as they were growing up, and like this is what they all did to get through it. The documentary itself is actually really good. John Rhys Davies, who is who was he in Raiders? He was name. I lost his name. He was
in my axe, the dwarf Gimli.
Yeah, and he was also in you know, he was like the professor in Sliders for people. So he's in the documentary. Eli Roth is in the documentary. It kind of tells the story of part of the documentary dedicates some time to like how this became popular in the first place, like how it spread, you know, like virally. Because obviously there was no YouTube to put this on, and so they tell that story as well. But it's just really fascinating, and Ash already saw it. I was going to recommend it to both of you because I know Matt likes documentaries, and there's also a lot of like really interesting filmmaking stuff in this for Ash. So
It was great, man. It was great.
Yeah, and if, you know, obviously if you like Indiana Jones, you need to see it, and then you need to go find the original film, which I think is available now too. So that's Raiders. It's on Netflix right now, and I encourage people to see it because it is just crazy.
This is Jennifer Hale, and you're listening to the Rated NA podcast at nerdappropriate.com.
So our question of the week was a pretty simple one. It says, what one thing scares you the most? And our first answer is from Mr. Robert Freemering, Mr. Slick on Twitter. He has a very serious answer. It says, can't think of something outside the norm to seriously scare me, so I'm going deep, scared of disappointing my loved ones.
That's the worst, man.
Yeah, really disappointment.
Close. Yep.
I'll read this one, guys.
You should.
Our buddy Ryan, who is at Steven Internet, which is a Kanye West joke, P.S. Says, this year's election, right?
All caps.
I'm pretty sure I read that correctly, too.
Yep. Thanks for typing in all caps.
He's very bored, guys. He's stuck in your neck of the woods right now.
Oh, boy.
So, I see. Not doing a lot. Yeah.
Alexi Staffer at X Staffer says, isolation gone home was so scary for me. Yeah. It kind of is for a time. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Do you all have answers to this question?
Sure. I can give two.
Go ahead.
I was going to give like my cartoony answer and my deep answer. You guys want that?
Yeah, sure.
We're going to lay it bare here.
Secrets.
My cartoony answer, which is a real fear of mine, is spiders. Mm-hmm. For very real reasons and for not very real reasons.
Yeah, I know some of those reasons.
I have been bitten, and now I have powers. and then my deep reason is, let's see, how would I word it? Like never truly being creatively satisfied.
Oh,
that's a hard one, man. No, I feel that one too, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. That's my deep one.
Oh, how about you, Ash?
I guess I'll do the same. I have like a silly like go to, and then I'll have like the serious deep one. I am horribly afraid of heights. It's something I've tried to kick. I've gone like rock wall climbing and done stuff before, but man alive, holy crap. I just can't, like, literally, like when I went on vacation a couple years ago with my wife, and we went up to this tower in Oregon someplace, and it was like really, really high up. Like really low railing, and I just was like literally like my legs wouldn't work, and I'm like, I'm never this scared about anything, so heights just destroy me, which sucks. And the one thing that scared me the most, I think, was watching my wife give birth. It was not a it was awesome when my son came out and he was like perfectly healthy and stuff, but like the process, like the multiple days of the birthing process, and like watching like that level of like intensity for that long was probably pretty, it was pretty hardcore. And for, you know, for all you women out there that have given birth, goddamn.
All right.
Goddamn. That's some shit right there. Yeah. So hats off to you. So those are my answers.
Awesome. I don't know that I have a jokey answer, but I know that I've said my real answer before, which is like being trapped. That's like, you know, that feeling when you,
like a bear trap.
No, like the feeling where you, like,
is this an Akbar joke?
No. Well, that's wow. Wow, you really just connected the dots for me there. I never thought about that before.
It all comes full circle.
Yeah, mind blown. No, it's like that feeling when you like go to IKEA and it's very crowded. And of a sudden you're
IKEA
just
scares me though too, man.
But it's like all of a sudden you just can't move, and then like it's not even like physically trapped, but that's a good physical example of being trapped. So I'm not necessarily like claustrophobic, but if all of a sudden you get that sense where it's like it's not easy for you to get out of the situation, then that's when I freak out.
Yeah, I hear you, man.
Yeah.
Yep. That's a good one too.
Yep.
Next one is from Max Caulfield, who is a new listener. Says the Twitter handle is I regret my past, mm-hmm. and it says, for real, adult life, that shit is scary, man. Yes, it is.
Yes.
It is. Zen at Z McLeod, MacLeod.
Sorry, we butchered your name. Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry. The sound of a clicker in The Last of Us.
Very true.
It's good. Yeah.
Yep. Shout out to Girl Tribe Gaming. She's half of it.
Yeah.
Did I butcher the name? Do you guys know the name? Did I just butcher it?
I believe it's McLeod, isn't it?
McLeod?
Yeah, I think so.
I'm an idiot. You can't trust me with anything.
Alex at Dusty Tulip says, Until Dawn Rush of Blood PSVR demo, most terrifying thing I've ever done, still traumatized.
Until Dawn's so good, guys.
Really?
Yeah, okay. Until Dawn's so good.
Awesome.
I haven't tried the VR, but the actual game itself is fantastic.
Yeah, I've seen it come up a couple of times, but it's PS4 only, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
Oh, is it me?
Yes.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Alyssa Elizabeth says, falling? Any of those roller coasters that involve big drops? Nope.
Oh, no.
I used to be afraid of roller coasters, and my friend pinned me into going to Busch Gardens and going on one, like would not let me get out of line. I was having like a panic attack and he was forcing me to go through it, which sounds like a terrible thing for a friend to do, but ended up getting me over my fear, and then I was totally fine. And I was like, oh, I love roller coasters, and then kept going on them after that. It was like a weird memory. The last one is Sam Nee at Eating Green Eggs, and she says roaches, and then has like the no-see-em monkey.
Yeah.
Roaches, man. Don't come to Florida.
I was going to say the same thing. So true.
They call them all sorts of cute names up here. They're like water bugs.
Oh, and
like,
yeah.
You're like, you're not palmetto fooling me.
Flies. And I'm like, those are fucking roaches, everybody. We live inside of them in Florida.
Oh, boy. So true. Well, that was good, good times, guys. Yeah, good listeners, episode, thank you so much for listening to episode 249 of the Rated NA podcast. We're going to be back next week with a big episode 250.
Yay!
And we'll have some special stuff for you guys there. So stay tuned for that. And you guys can follow us on Twitter, and that's at NerdAppropriate. You can email us directly, and that is Matt, Scott, or Ash at NerdAppropriate.com. If you have a general question, you can send that to nerds at NerdAppropriate.com. In terms of other social media, we have Twitch TV slash NerdAppropriate, Instagram NerdAppropriate, we have Facebook slash NerdAppropriate, and basically everywhere else NerdAppropriate.
Syndicating
as well
on YouTube now as well.
Yeah, we're on YouTube. We have some old interviews and special episodes up on YouTube, so check out NerdAppropriate there as well and follow us. Thank you guys so much for listening to our horror episode, and once again, listen to episode 250 probably next week. Thanks, guys.
Have a spooky week.